Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Hello to everyone and welcome to At the Movies with Joanna. This is Joanna Paxinou and you're listening to Sedona Talk Radio. And today we're very honored to have with us a very special guest, Robert Osborne, the very popular and highly respected host of Turner Film Classics. He also co-hosts The Essentials and Programmers. He's a columnist for The Hollywood Reporter with news from Hollywood to Broadway. And he's the original film historian for the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. And he writes a history of the Oscars. His next book is out this fall on 80 years of the Oscars. And he also hosts Academy events in Los Angeles and New York. Welcome, Robert Osborne.
Thank you.
So glad to have you.
It's very nice to be here. Thanks.
I did want to ask you about the Sedona Film Festival that was held here in Sedona at the end of February. What did you enjoy it, and what did you find most attractive and appealing about the festival?
Well, even if I didn't enjoy it, I would say I did, because otherwise they would never let me come back. But I did enjoy it. It was great. I was very impressed with how many movies they had. That they, you know, they have all those movies going in about five or six different theaters all day long for an extended period of time, and interesting films that haven't been shown elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And what I was impressed with, the support that the local community, besides those that came from out of town to attend the festival, but the great support that it got here.
Yes.
So, and I think people had a great time, and you get, you know, people like Diane Ladd and others that are filmmakers that come and support it, all crazy about it. I was very impressed.
I was impressed over the camaraderie between the filmmakers and the non-filmmakers, because they were very supportive and they really enjoyed it. And it was a very good event for everybody who attended.
Yes, and the independent filmmakers, you know, are, I think, are a special breed, because those are people that are really dedicated to film. They're not working within the big studio structure.
Mm-hmm.
So to find other allies for that, it's like going off on a little bit of a reservation or something, where you've got people that are all of like mind, that want to make good movies and want to contribute and not just make, you know, something with Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson romping down the street somewhere, but, you know, have some movies of some substance.
Yes,
and there were a lot of very good movies here.
Yes, I enjoyed it very much. Now, you also have your own festival, the Robert Osborne Classic Film Festival, every year in Atlanta?
No, it's actually in Athens, Georgia, which is where the University of Georgia is, just about an hour and a half outside of Atlanta. But it's only 8 films, and over a 4-day period, it's constructed so that everybody can come to the festival and see all the films being shown, which you couldn't do at the Sedona, because there's so many films, you have to kind of select what you're going to see. But the real thrust of my festival is to be able to see classic or popular films that mean a lot to you, but on a big screen, because so many people have never seen Sound of Music on a big screen, or Gone with the Wind, or Casablanca, or some of the great classic films. So it's a chance to see these wonderful movies, but as they were meant to be seen when they were originally made. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, because a classic film on a big screen, which is something actually I did at Sedona this year, was show Casablanca and Sunset Boulevard. Mm-hmm. Just to be able to see it, it gives a whole different value to a film. And that was the thrust of the festival.
It really is an important issue, is seeing the films on the big screen. It does make a tremendous difference. I didn't realize it before until I saw Casablanca on the big screen.
Yeah, it's like a totally different movie. And you see something like Lawrence of Arabia, if you're used to seeing it on a regular-sized television screen, or even a large television screen, but to see it in 70 millimeter on a screen and really, and I'm very proud of the other thing that I think is so important, which is why I'm very much in favor of what Turner Classic Movies does, is to be able to see a film without commercials, without breaks, because those films are all made with a certain rhythm, and particularly if you get, say, a Hitchcock film with a suspense element, and you can't break those things for commercials, or you shouldn't be, you know, have a time when you're kind of allowed to go to the kitchen and you know, and get a glass of milk or something, because it, once you break that rhythm that the filmmaker meant, it takes you out of the mood of the movie.
It does, it does. And then by the time the commercials are over and you're back, you forgot where you were at and what the momentum was. So it definitely makes a big difference. And talking about the films on classic films, you had said one time that the classic films were like moments frozen in time. And I, as a member of your audience, can say you unfreeze those moments for us. It's not only that you have a wealth of knowledge of the movies, but you humanize this knowledge, and you bring us into the movie in a different perspective.
Good.
And you really are unique with that, because I don't know anybody else who does it as well as you do. You really make watching these old movies an experience for us. So thank you for that.
Thank you. That's a nice compliment.
Well, I know you've been asked this a million times. I'm going to make it a million and one.
Okay.
In comparing today's movies with the classics, and I'm not saying there are not many classics movies produced today, but the classic films, to me, seem to be more memorable. And I wondered what your thoughts were.
Well, I think there'll probably be some films coming out in this era that will last and have a lifespan. But I think that the biggest change, the biggest difference between the movies of kind of the golden age of Hollywood, what they call, refer to as that, and today, is people used to go to the movies for a different reason. They went to movies to escape from their everyday life. I mean, one of the times movies was the most popular was during the Depression, and that's when they went to see Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers dancing in these Art Deco sets, and they went to see these lavish musicals with Busby Berkeley numbers and things like that, because they wanted to be entertained, because life outside was so grim. Today, even though life is pretty grim outdoors, we don't want fantasy, apparently. We do want, I guess the kids want Indiana Jones and that kind of boom, boom fantasy, Iron Man. But basically, people don't want Cary Grant in a romance with Audrey Hepburn or Grace Kelly. They don't want two people who look like no other human beings on earth. Or they don't want the women to look glamorous like Joan Crawford, or beautiful like Lana Turner, or men handsome like Robert Taylor or Jerome Power. What we want now is we want Robert De Niro, if he plays a taxi driver, to look like the taxi driver we just rode with. And you get some beautiful woman like Michelle Pfeiffer, and you don't want her to look beautiful. You want her to look like the waitress. And so we're in a world of reality. Well, when you bring it down to reality terms, it takes all the glamour out of the business. So I think that what we really respond to with some of these old films is the glamour element. Mm-hmm. When you watch Ingrid Bergman and Cary Grant in Notorious, you're seeing two terrifically glamorous people, and you get caught up with them in their story, but it is the glamour that's also attracting you, because it's a different world than the world outside. And we don't seem to, people today, at the moment, but those things all change, but right now we don't want that kind of glamour in our lives. Which is surprising, because again, with everything the way it is outdoors, in the real world, our world never seemed to be in such chaos or trouble everywhere as it is now. You'd think that maybe a little fantasy would be very welcome. And I wouldn't be surprised if a few people had the courage and the money to be able to make some films with a little more fantasy element in it. And I'm not talking just about, something like the movie Enchantment or something like that, but just with people living lives a little more spiffy than otherwise, I think that they might do very well box office-wise.
Yeah, I think that element is still there. I think part of an audience would still want to see something like that. But again, we don't have the stars that we had then, too.
But I also have a theory about that. I think that because of the subject matter being so often violent and sexual today, I mean, that they seem determined that every movie has to have a lot of four-letter words in it and sexual situations, that there are a lot of people that would normally want to be actors or actresses would not be interested in that profession anymore. I think if you take that whole list of women, for instance, that were so successful in the 30s or in 40s, Greer Garson, Ingrid Bergman, Claudette Colbert, Irene Dunn, all those, Loretta Young, that gave, Madeline Carroll, that gave so much elegance and beauty to film. I don't think any of them, Jean Tierney, they wouldn't want to be in films anymore, having to do what women have to do in films today.
True.
And I think you get a lot of classic guys, young Jerome Power, Robert Taylor. I don't think they'd want to be particularly in movies, because the movies are asking them to misbehave in ways that they perhaps just have a natural tendency to not think was, appropriate behavior. So those guys go into other kinds of business. Those women's if they become business wise, they get into publishing, they get into, you know, art design, they get into other things, but they don't get into acting anymore. Because you can't think of a film maybe made in the last 5 years that say a Claudette Colbert or a Loretta Young would be interested in being in. It's not appropriate. So I think that, again, the way that films are today and the way people are making films, that we've lost a lot of those people that would otherwise devote their life to being an actor, actress in films.
That's really a shame, because I think this generation has lost a lot from not having this kind of movies and things to look at.
I just hope that they take a look at, you know, that they do give, and they will probably, hopefully, as they get a little older. It's hard to get kids interested in seeing old films or older films, but you know, when they settle down, start getting married in their late 20s, early 30s, and raise a family, then they'll watch Turner Classic Movies, and it'll be like discovering a library full of great books you've never read to see these great films.
But there are, I think, younger people in their 20s who are interested in the classic movies.
A lot. I'm very pleased about that, and many, many of them are. It's just that the new films are not being made for them,
yeah,
but they are interested in it. And as somebody once said, which I think was so wise, they said, you know, if you haven't seen a film, it's not an old movie. It's an old movie. If you've never seen Sunset Boulevard, made in 1950 with William Holden, that's not an old film. It's a new movie. And I do envy people that haven't yet seen Gigi or haven't yet seen Lawrence of Arabia or haven't seen Maltese Falcon or haven't seen Casablanca, because they still got that to look forward to, just like reading Treasure Island for the first time, or, you know, Count of Monte Cristo, or some of the great classic books.
You know, the funny thing happened when I was at the Sedona Film Festival. I was waiting in line to see Casablanca, and somebody said, oh, I hope...
You had to stand in line?
With the media. It was a very short line.
Okay.
And somebody said, oh, I hope it isn't the colorized version. So there was this kid, he didn't look any more than maybe 19, 20. He said, oh, no, it's not going to be colorized, not with Robert Osborne.
Oh, good for him, good for him.
Yay.
I have to say, that was one, you know, I really wanted this job when it was offered to me, but that was the one thing that held me back, was that I didn't want to be hosting any colorized movies.
Mm.
And a deal was kind of made with, and it was interesting because of that, they don't do colorized movies anymore.
Right.
But that was one thing that whenever they would show a colorized film on TNT or TBS, it would get bigger ratings than if it was shown in black and white.
Really?
But the deal was kind of made between myself, Brad Siegel that ran the channel at that point, and others, that if a colorized film version or existed of a film, that they would show it on TBS or TNT, but we didn't have to show it on TCM, that they would always be shown in their original form. It's the same way, if it was ever done in CinemaScope, filmed in CinemaScope, we will never show it a flat version.
Oh.
Sometimes they have what they call pan and scan versions, but we never show those. The only time we would show a pan and scan, the only time we'd show a flat version of what was a CinemaScope movie is if it was actually shot that way, because there were several films when CinemaScope first came in, like Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, they shot it in CinemaScope, but then they shot it again in a flat version because not every theater could show it in CinemaScope. So some of those do exist, but we never show those flat versions.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that at least if you're a movie buff, you can watch TCM and you're going to see it exactly as it was shown. And also, if it's a roadshow attraction, if it was shown in theaters where you had to have a reserved seat and all that, we show it with the original intermission, original overture. We just had on the other day a movie, Since You Went Away, and when it first came out, it had an overture, it had an intermission with intermission music, and it had exit music, and we always show those versions.
I remember.
So you're seeing it exactly.
That's great. I love the black and white movies.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
There's nothing more beautiful than a John Ford Western, the way he uses scenery in black and white. Just like there are some movies that, you know, really cry for color. Sound of Music would not be what it is if you were showing Austria at that point in black and white. But by the same token, a film like Psycho or Sunset Boulevard would be destroyed by color.
Yeah, totally. So do you think, I know years ago, movies played a big part in people's lives. Like you said, depression, hard times, they went to escape. Do you think that movies play other roles in people's lives? Do they inspire them to go into making movies or anything like that?
Well, I think they do. I worry about it sometimes, though, that the inspiration people are getting. I think we get heroes from the movies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it was better to have Jimmy Stewart or Gary Cooper be a hero than perhaps, you know, some of the heroes you're getting today. Yeah. But, yeah, I think they do. I think the one thing the movies don't do now that they used to do more was pique your curiosity about certain eras, certain times. They made more historical movies, very popular, too. You might have the story of Louis Pasteur, and it might not only tell you about how this man invented pasteurization of milk, but also his life. You have the life of Emile Zola, which was a very popular film, Madame Curie, and all these. And they would at least make you want to read more about these people that, you know, made great discoveries, medical or otherwise. You see A Tale of Two Cities, and that might be the first you really know about the French Revolution because you weren't paying attention in class when you were being taught that. But it brings it to life and makes it interesting.
Yes.
All these different eras, what happened with Mutiny on the Bounty, changing maritime laws and things about, you know, what happened, behavior, treatment of sailors on ships and all of that. That's all part of history, and movies used to tell it in an entertaining way, but also pique your interest about it, mm-hmm. about the Santa Fe Trail with Errol Flynn. They died with their boots on, about Little Bighorn and all that. And they don't make movies like that too much
anymore. No, they don't. They don't. And I miss them.
You can get them on Turner Classic Movies. You see, get it back to that again. Yes, a shameless plug.
You know, you think of making movies as an art form, which it is. And the other day there was on Classic Trinity Movies, there was the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse with Rudolph Valentino. And I was like, well, I saw this silent movie, and I'm like, I don't want to read titles. But somehow it grabbed me, and it kind of pulled me in. And I was thinking, they made some really great movies when they didn't have the technology, they didn't have sound. They had bare bones cast. I mean, you'd see the film credits was like one or two screens. Now you see tons and tons of crew and this and that. But even in its infancy, even when sound came in and they weren't that familiar with it, they made some really great movies that are still memorable today.
Yeah, and that's another thing why I love the fact that there is a channel that allows you to see that, because every Sunday night we have a silent movie, so you mm-hmm. can see Garbo and some of these people. You know, like any industry, when they started out in those early silent movies, they were pretty crude and all of that, but as technical advances were made, by the time the late 20s, when they were really at their apex, I mean, there were a lot of people that were distraught that silent movies were out because they had reached such an art form and were so fascinating. Mm-hmm. Cinematography was so great, and you had these great faces and stars like Lon Chaney and Greta Garbo and Douglas Fairbanks Sr. and those others doing great work. And then, of course, when sound came in, it was prehistoric again because they had to deal with microphones and they didn't know how to do that. So movies suddenly got very static. People, actors didn't know how to talk well. They didn't know how to record it. So then it took like, you know, several years before you got into movies that were, you know, almost fairly close to 10 years before they got into being really wonderful again.
Wow.
And then, of course, the color revolution came in, and they had to work with color and figure out how to do that properly because the cameras were big and heavy and bulky, and they couldn't move easily. And then they got lighter cameras, so that added to it. Then, you know, widescreen made different compositions, and some of those are pretty awful, those early ones, because they didn't know how to. So it's just interesting because it seems like every time in the movies, and it's probably like this with other professions, that every time they get just really wonderful, a new invention comes in and they kind of go backwards and they have to start again to learn of the technical advances.
I know with television coming in the 50s, they came up with all these gimmicks, the CinemaScope, and I remember seeing movies with the 3D glasses and quite a...
Well, and also, look, in television, speaking of that, you look at an old I Love Lucy show, and they're wonderful because Lucille Ball is so wonderful and the cast is great. But, I mean, they have the most prehistoric set. I mean, it's just like a boxy set.
Mm-hmm.
Not really. And the Jackie Gleason show, they've got like a table and a sink, and that's everything. Well, I mean, they wouldn't allow something. People wouldn't sit still for a minute for that, because your sets are really kind of, you know, glamorously put together and spacious and all of that stuff. But you look back at television, they had a terrible time at the beginning. They didn't have any money, and they didn't have good lighting and all of that stuff. What's shocking is when you see some of the early telecasts that they have at the Museum of Television and Radio in L.A. and New York, of early telecasts of the Academy Awards. Right. I mean, they've got all these great stars, but so awful. I mean, the camera work and all of that, just terrible, you know, compared to what we have now. We have, you know, it's like these huge, spectacular shows they put on.
They are beautiful. And, you know, I wasn't aware that the Academy had lots of programs throughout the year for the public, too, exhibits and shows, and like tribute to Bette Davis, which was really wonderful evening. I enjoyed that so much. But I didn't know that the Academy offered all this.
Yes, they do a lot. They have a lot of, also, they will have a lot of people go out and do visiting seminars, not only in this country, but around the country. They have various student programs for young filmmakers. They have all kinds of programs. It is a huge, huge operation. They're in the process now of building an incredible museum, the first Hollywood museum that they're building in Hollywood on Vine Street. It's going to be an incredible thing, and it's going to be a living museum, meaning that even though you go to the museum and attend it on a trip to Los Angeles, when you go back a year later, there's something all new to see in the museum. It'd be like the Museum of Modern Art in New York or Metropolitan, something like that. And so that's going to be fabulous. But they do a lot, and that's why that was actually the kind of the worry of the actor or the writer's strike that may knock out the Academy Awards, because if they don't get that like $50 million that they make off of the telecast, a lot of those programs have to be stopped because they do so much. They have one of the great libraries, research libraries in the world, that anything you need, you can, you know, they've got not only Katharine Hepburn's Oscars, they have all of her papers, they have her journals, they have clippings, they have letters, they have all that. So if you're trying to do an intricate study on Katharine Hepburn, this is way beyond going on IMDb on your computer or something like that. This has stuff that you can never, letters to Spencer Tracy, letters from Spencer Tracy, all this, and it's there for the public to study and do all that. And I'm just talking about one star. They've got him, you know. And so that's an enormous thing.
That is enormous.
And they've got posters. They save every movie poster they can get. And they have in the lobby of, if you at the Betty thing, you know, there are a lot of posters in the lobby. They always have changing poster displays. So they're also preserving not only film, but they're preserving the art of the movie poster, how movies were sold and all of that. Now, nobody's collecting that except individual collectors, but the Academy is like a depository for all that stuff. So through the years, particularly because that stuff's all done on paper, if that's not really protected, that, you know, that can all
disintegrate
and stuff. So they protect it and all that. They do really incredible things.
Yeah, again, with the Bette Davis tribute in the lobby, they had a case with some letters of hers and her charm bracelet, and
right. It
was so touching and so moving. I mean, you really feel this woman. I mean, it was just incredible. And the clips that they showed, I always thought of her as a great actress. But when they show clip after clip of all her great performances, and you say, my God, what a body of work.
And also to see that the power of, you know, Bette Davis was not very tall. She was barely over 5 feet tall.
Really?
She had this towering presence. But to see her on that big screen, see her up on a screen, not, again, not on television size, but see her on that big screen, and the power that woman had, I mean, it's just, and then you say, now, if I never got it before, now I really get it, why she was such a big star, why people would go into that theater and see it. And that's the only time you would ever see Bette Davis. You know, today you can go see Tom Cruise in a movie in the theater, but you also see Tom Cruise on Netflix movies. You see him being talked to on the Oprah show. You see him being talked to by anything. But in those days, you only saw Bette Davis on the big screen, that towering presence, and that was incredible. Yes, and the great treat of the Bette Davis night for me was Olivia de Havilland being the surprise,
unannounced.
Yeah.
She looked marvelous.
Yes, in 92 on July 1st.
Yeah, and so alive. And
so alive and gracious.
Oh,
a great inspiration to anybody, how you can be at 92.
Yes, yes. And I thought it was really classy of her that she didn't want anybody to know she was coming.
Right.
She wanted to just focus on Betty Davis. I thought that was very, very elegant lady.
Yeah.
It was such a treat. I never expected to
see her. A class act.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She was delightful.
Mm-hmm.
Sharp and everything. That was a wonderful evening. Well, we still, there's so much to talk about. And what is next for Robert Osborne? Anything
special? Well, actually, what next? I've just kind of come off a busy period doing some extracurricular things, the Betty Davis thing. I did a thing with Jane Fonda and her family in Atlanta that was a fundraiser for one of her charities, and that was interesting to do. In August, I'm going to be appearing with, don't ask, the Atlanta Symphony. I don't quite know what I'm going to do, but they're doing a night at the movies, and I'm a special guest. And since I don't play an instrument well, I don't sing, I can't dance, I don't know what I'm going to be doing, but I'm going to be doing something. Then in September, I'm going to participate in the Port Townsend Film Festival in Washington State.
Oh.
I have family that's up there, so we're going to have a family reunion and do that. And then again, fall starts getting here, and it's time to, you know, be looking at new movies and new theater openings in New York. So it's
busy schedule.
Yeah, but it's stuff I really love to do.
Oh, so. I can tell. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can go on talking for hours with you, but unfortunately our time is coming to
a close. Well, can we do this again when I come back for the Sonoma Film
Festival? Anytime.
Thank you.
Anytime. Always welcome on our show. Thank you so much for being
My
here.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Thank you, our listeners. You've been listening to At the Movies with Joanna, and this is Joanna Paxino on Sedona Talk Radio. Thank you so much, and that's a wrap.
Are you any relation to